This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's all about living your best life
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Wonderful to have you with us for another episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Food, fashion, fun and so much more on today's show. We were in conversation with Chef Vikas Khanna. He was in Dubai. He has a restaurant called Kanara. But he's so much more than just a chef. He's a humanitarian, an author, a judge on MasterChef India. And he was on hand to not only tell us about the new menu and some of the things he's been working on behind the scenes at Kanara, but also tell us about the efforts he's been making in his native India, raising millions in COVID relief. And looking to the headlines, we were speaking about the latest food news with Tyrone Reed, the CEO of Al Alabar Enterprises. They're the people behind some of your favourite cafes. So what does he think about the F&B industry right now? Are we really bouncing back? And any predictions for what we could be eating in the future? And I have to say, as a teenager, I was a bit more preoccupied with boys and exams rather than thinking about social justice and stereotypes. But in conversation with some incredible teens who've taken the Vogue challenge and turned it on its head. A must listen if you do have young daughters. And I've been wanting to talk to Dubai weather guy Howard Townsend for months. I finally got my chance. He's got an incredibly popular Facebook group where he offers up some predictions for what the weather's going to be doing around the UAE and some beautiful photos of the countryside as well. How did he get started and what is the science behind predicting the skies? Plus, back to food. Five ingredient recipes. If you, like me, no food but are a bit, well, of a beginner when it comes to actually cooking it, you're in the right place. Justine Damp from Eat Better Food was on hand with some recipe inspiration. And what should you be wearing this summer? Or indeed, what shouldn't you be wearing? Superstar stylist Kelly Lundberg was on hand with the latest fashion trends, the ones you can try, easily incorporate into your lifestyle, and why she thinks Crocs should be banned.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And the conversation this afternoon is mostly about food, one of my favourite topics, as we're looking to industry insiders, we're looking at food news. And speaking now to Chef Vikas Khanna. He's a restaurateur, a cookbook writer, a humanitarian. We'll be talking about his efforts to raise money in his native India, and a filmmaker as well. Chef, how are you today? Welcome back to Dubai.
Good to hear your voice. Good, Helen. All good here.
It's so strange because last time we spoke, you came into the studio and we were able to sit and have a good old natter. But it is pandemic time, so we're on Microsoft Teams. Where are you speaking to us from?
From my restaurant, where my restaurant is, at Lakeview JA Resorts.
And it's been, the reviews have just been fantastic. And when we spoke last time, you were talking about some of your influences growing up. For anyone that hasn't had the chance to go there yet, how would you describe the menu at Kanara?
So at Kanara, we wanted to create something which is really comfort food. You know, I totally understand that, you know, sometimes comfort food is beyond trend. It's always in trend, something which is comforting, easy, simple, home-inspired cooking. But when you look at things, you know, the look at the plates and everything, we've really worked very hard to make them look a little different with a little bit more signature style so that they stand out. But the flavor is hardcore Indian. And it's a family restaurant. Absolutely love the vibe. We've created something which is looks like an extension of your own dining rooms.
And but the food you're serving is far from what I would serve in my dining room, Chef. Tell us about some of your favourites from the menu. Go on, this is your chance to make our mouths water this Thursday afternoon.
So I was just working on some pickles, which will be added as accompaniments with some of the dishes which we've created for the new menu. One dish which will soon be on the menu is shrimp balchao, kind of puff pastry wraps. You will love the idea that what we are doing is that, you know, shrimp is our fish in the coastal regions of India. It's cooked totally different in different parts of the world, and especially in when you talk about subcontinent India. But this dish is really inspired by the Portuguese influence on the Goan cuisine. And we have this minced fish, which we actually create this balchao, which is one of the very signature dishes of Goa. And then we use that minced fish and we wrap it around in the homemade puff pastry with nigella and fennel seeds. Oh. And it's really, really, it's exceeded our own expectations at how delicious, because the fish becomes extremely moist and it becomes very tender. And then you have the wrap around it, which is very crusty, with some flavors of the licorice flavor of fennel seeds. You love it. It's going to go in the menu this week, so I'm very proud of it.
Well, you've got the biggest smile on your face when you talk about Food Chef. It just goes to show. You do, though, and it's wonderful. And what is it that you get from creating dishes and feeding people that gives you such joy? What is it?
I just feel that, you know, food is one thing which can actually erase a lot of differences of who we are. Food is one of the greatest expressions of secularism to democracy, and to you know, we food is something which is such an important part of our sustenance, not just physical, but just being spiritual and, you know, union of communities together. Mm-hmm. I think left behind in all the ways that people used to connect, food is one of the most universal voices, and we've seen it during pandemic that people found solace in the kitchens when they were cooking and posting videos. So we have so many master chefs from every home in every country now. And people found comfort in cooking, which was kind of disappearing because we were following so much of the American lifestyle, which I'm nothing against it because, you know, it helped us with a lot of takeaways and restaurants. But I love when people have started cooking in the last 1 year.
We have seen an explosion, of home cooking over the course of the last year. And You mentioned people finding solace in the kitchen there, Chef Vickers. Was that the case for you growing up? What did the kitchen offer you as a child?
Oh, kitchen offered for me being visible. I felt that I was invisible in the classrooms or playgrounds and regular life growing up in a small town in North India. In kitchen, I felt I was visible. I don't know why. I felt that I was important. I was an important part of society. Otherwise, I felt I was totally useless. But it defined me. It made me feel I'm gonna quote a line from my next upcoming novel, in which I says, "In comfort, I found peace. In kitchen, I found equality for myself."
Wow!
And that I can disappear in that equality, and I loved it because it made me equal to everyone else.
And, you know, we know that the kitchen, there is very much a hierarchy. In some ways, it's like an army. You know, you're coming in often as a young age and then working your way through to that top spot, you know, to like the golden thread embroidered on your whites. And you've worked with some huge names in your time. On screen, obviously, MasterChef India. You've also worked in kitchens. The names of Gordon Ramsay, Bobby Flay. But then you're also learning always, I think, from those who are technically junior to you. Can you tell us about some of your big learnings from colleagues over the years, Chef?
I think one of the most important learnings I've ever had will be with Gordon Ramsay, because Gordon said that, you know, one of his first jobs was working in an Indian restaurant when he was very young, and he had just opened his London restaurant. This is, I think, in 2007. And he says that, you know, Chef, would you have some time to teach me some classic Indian dishes? I'm like, yes, but you let me know what time. He's saying, does 1 a.m. work for you?
What?
When you know the mark of a Michelin star genius. And I'm like, Chef, absolutely. I'll keep all the mise en place ready. And whenever you're finished with your meetings and work. And he was like, absolutely. And we worked in the kitchen late night. And I promise you, Helen, he is one of the best students I've had, though I've learned a lot from him, but he's one of the best students I've ever had in my life.
That's an amazing dynamic, I think, because we think of him being, and I've been lucky enough to meet Chef Gordon Ramsay myself. My kids call him Gordon. There's a photo of them and him on our fridge. I'm like, you don't know you're born calling Chef Gordon Ramsay Gordon. But we know, we think of him being this big character and this domineering force, but to be there at 1 o'clock in the morning as a willing student of another cuisine is a wonderful side to think of someone who we think we know.
And he didn't have to do that, you know. The most of the things, I told him how to make some spice paste, and we did some dishes from north and from south, and it was beautiful. And then he went on the camera the next day morning when he was shooting, and he says, guys, I'm going to teach you some modern Indian cooking, which is delightful. No, because it was not just he went on television. He actually learned it before going on TV and presenting those dishes, which was amazing. And then next day, I get onto the show. This was Aadhin Kitchen Nightmares. And there I got on the show. He said, you know, this is the guy who is actually redefining Indian food. And I remember end of the show, he said something to me which has struck with me. He said that, you know, you got to keep working hard because you never know that the change happens if you don't give up. And I feel that your cooking has the integrity and the focus and the vision of a Michelin star chef.
He was right.
And he was one of the first people to even congratulate me after I won it. But I still get emotional because somebody had faith in me, because I told him that I came to America to add that Michelin star to my name. And I would endure any kind of bullying, racism, pain, scars, everything. But eventually I need to find a way when I would get a call from that guide. You know, for us as chefs, that's one of the highest, you know. It's like for an actor, Oscar is one of the highest ways they can be awarded and be recognized. You know, some people say, we don't care about those things. I said, you don't care about it until you win it.
And then you don't want to lose it.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Delighted to be in conversation today with Chef Vikas Khanna. He is back in Dubai at Kanara, his restaurant at JA Lakeview Hotel. He's a chef, a TV presenter, judge, restaurateur, cookbook writer, novelist, filmmaker and humanitarian. And that humanitarian role has really come into its own over the course of the pandemic. Chef, you've helped an awful lot of people over the last year or so, and we're seeing and hearing heartbreaking things on the news and radio about what's happening in India. What have you seen on the ground?
So one thing which was extremely heartbreaking was the condition of, you know, the food issue in the country last year. And I thought, you know, this has to be dealt with. And I was based out of New York, but, you know, different time zones, different teams, everything. But we figured out during the lockdowns, a lot of people who were daily wage earners, you know, the migrant workers, they call them, I don't know why, because they're not migrant, they're part of the country. But then they had to go back home, and there was too many things which were so disturbing when we saw the news coming from India. And that's why we started Feed India, which has fed more than 65 million meals, which is a big amount of number, but still is very less as compared to what was required at that time. And then after that, with the second wave, we were doing something called India Strong with Vibha Foundation. And they've been raising money for oxygen concentrators, PPE kits, need for the hospital, for whatever they need. And I just partnered with Quaker Oats. So in many hospitals around the country, the doctors are going to get vending machines, which is going to be serving Quaker Oats for their health and for nourishment.
And you were talking earlier about the power of food, and it is its connection, its heritage, its identity, but sometimes it can just be pure sustenance. And I think it's amazing that a chef such as you, who works with such elevated ingredients, still understands the roots of your cuisine, but also your roots of you in the country. And, you know, as of last week, you've raised more than $2.5 million, and that's going into COVID relief. And it's just an absolutely incredible accomplishment, Chef. So huge, huge well done. Thank you for all of that.
You know, we started with $500,000, and it was a surprise just with a single tweet. There were so many people who came forward, and so many partnerships happened just overnight. And Vibha has done an amazing job. They post their updates on every single, because I feel raising funds is amazing, a noble cause, but being accountable for every single cent is mandatory in my books. Mm-hmm. See on Vibha.org every single day. We post on what's going on, a new ambulance spot. Today we set up a makeshift 100-bed hospital near Bangalore in South India. And we are going to continue to do as much as we can, because India needs the entire world's support right now.
Well said, indeed. And I think what that speaks to is, you know, one tweet is so many people want to help, but often you just don't know how. And it needs someone like you with influence who's using their platform in a way to raise awareness and tell people, show people the way. And I think that I don't want to use the phrase celebrity chef, because you're so much more than that. But I feel like that's an incredible privilege, really, to be able to use your influence in that way.
I think it's all because of my mom. I would be honest with you. I was in no position to do all this work of such high magnitude, but she kept telling me that I don't want to hear about anything else, because when I see the news, I feel my son has to stand with my country right now. And I think I was just doing it for her. I was not doing it for any other reason.
Well, she's an amazing influence as well in that case.
She was like, at the right time, she slapped me left and right. But I'm glad that, you know, I still have a piece of me which listens to her and respects her so much that just in her honor, I just stood up. And in the last 1 year, we pushed all our projects, movies, documentaries, everything on the back burner. And I said, nothing doing, because I don't want my mom to watch another news on TV and feel that her son is not paying attention or he's not a part of the crisis and not standing there in the battlefield.
Shafiqus, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. And I'm very thrilled that you are in Dubai right now. How long do we have you in town for? And are you going to be cooking over the weekend?
Yes, I'll be here till Saturday. And you have to see what we're doing with the restaurant. It's amazing. It's really one of my best creations.
Oh,
really.
Well, thank you again for everything you've been doing in your native India. And thank you for having a part in Dubai's food story as well. Thank you so much for your time today. Desperate to try those prawns you mentioned earlier. I'm coming to the hotel for my birthday in July, so I'll be sure to pop in and give one a try, Chef, because thank you so, so much. Have a wishing you a wonderful weekend. It is Thursday. It's a busy time in the food industry, so I'm going to let you get back to the kitchen. Have a good one, sir. Thank you.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It is Thursday and we're getting you in the mood for the weekend, which for many of us means basically planning our whole couple of days around what we're going to eat. Is this something you do? Do you plan your travels around cities and restaurants that you want to visit? Tyrone Reed is joining us, CEO of the Alibar Group. They are the people responsible for gorgeous Cafe Angelina, my children's favourite destination, Candelicious. They've also got Carrick House, Marquette, Social House and more. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. Can I ask you, well, I've got two questions if you don't mind, Tyrone. One, what did you have for breakfast?
I was actually at my restaurant in Cairo and I had an omelette.
Good. Go to work on
healthy.
An egg.
Yes, exactly.
And it might be the same answer, but what was the last great thing you ate?
Ooh, the last great thing I ate. Yesterday, I've been on a bit of a health kick of late. So yesterday I was a little bit naughty and I went into Dubai Mall and I was at Gia and I had one of our Dolce softies. So that was really something that was fantastic.
Oh, that sounds, well, naughty and very nice indeed.
Indeed.
Can you tell us a little bit about how the F&B industry is right now? When I think about, as you say, your destinations in the likes of Dubai Mall, we're obviously seeing a bit of a fall off when it comes to tourists. But what about residents? How do you feel business is doing overall?
Look, I think the pandemic has clearly been a really challenging time for everyone. And the F&B industry certainly hasn't been, immune from any of those challenges. But I think right now, I do think we're certainly feeling quite positive and upbeat. As we look at how 2021's panned out, the first couple of months were challenging, and we've kind of now started to see just business, and I think the overall sentiment for business, increase. And I'm sure that's got to do with the number of cases. I know we're seeing a slight spike now, but, you know, vaccine rollouts. And I just think there is this demand for people to get back to some level of normality. And we're starting to feel that really right now. And we're hoping that summer continues to see that.
Looking back to this time last year, or even earlier, when, you know, we were seeing restaurants closing down, some unfortunately not opening their doors again. As CEO, where you've got staff at all levels, you know, from wait staff to obviously admin, back of house, how did you manage to keep people motivated?
During the pandemic, I mean, we had the 4 week, you know, solid lockdown where we were all not able to go out and our businesses reverted to obviously delivery model only. We actually have an Instagram group, a closed Instagram group that's just for our team. During that time, we jumped on there. We were doing DJ sets from some of our team members. I was doing home cooking. We were just interacting with the team. I mean, everyone was in this together and it really felt like that. And I know that's something that people say a lot, but I just felt that it was just we had to connect on a real personal level. Now, we're a family business, and I think we behave in a very family-orientated way, very personable. You know, I write birthday cards for every single member of the team every year for them. It just felt that we had to behave in that way. So as I was Zooming my family back in the UK, I was, you know, on Zoom calls with our entire team, and that was through our Instagram account. We were doing Instagram Lives with them. You know, they were doing home cooking, so I set the baton off, and I started off making a pasta dish at home with my son, and then someone else did it the next night, and then all of a sudden this spiraled. So we had home cooking classes at 6 o'clock. We then had yoga classes in the morning by one of my other team members. We've got a very passionate DJ. He was jumping on, and we were having party nights. Just trying to keep the team together and really try and keep that motivation and that family spirit moving.
Mm-hmm. It feels like an awful long time ago. It really does. When those novel days of the Zoom quiz where you were excited to do it, and now
Absolutely.
If anyone asks, you know, you're like, I don't think I can do another Zoom quiz. But it has been wonderful to see the boomerang of people getting back out and keen to dine after a year, as you're saying, a lot of people switching to that delivery model and being able to enjoy some of their favourite restaurants in their own homes, also getting a bit sick of cooking, and now to be able to go out into the world. And we've been so lucky here in Dubai that we've been able to do that for a relatively long amount of time. I spoke to my best friend a couple of weeks ago, and she said, I'm going into Newcastle to meet some of the girls for work for lunch, and I'm going to be eating with people who haven't got the same last name as me, and I don't need to do the washing up. And I thought, wow, that is a reality check. That, you know, as a city, we love going out. You know, I think we probably eat out more than your average global citizen, and now we have had a huge number of options bouncing back. And unfortunately, as I said, some places simply haven't survived the pandemic. What do you think has been that point of difference between places that have not even survived, but some have thrived and some have sadly had to close their doors?
I think before the pandemic, there was talk, and you know, it's been well recorded that people have been saying that there was an oversupply of restaurants in Dubai and in the UAE. And I think, you know, there was naturally a feeling that there was maybe too many. And I think if you're not on the top of your game, you know, global situations such as a pandemic are just going to expose that even more than ever. So I think there was this feeling that there was going to be, unfortunately, casualties because, you know, sales were challenging, times were a little bit tougher. And then we had this pandemic that just kicked in and just brought everything that was kind of coming at us just, you know, momentarily at us like a steam train. So what we were expecting in the next year came to us in a matter of weeks. And I just think the businesses that could jump on it quickly, make decisive decisions, pivots, and I know that's a really overused term, but, you know, move into new ways, think about how that they develop, create, innovate. And I think businesses that maybe didn't have that ability to do it fast, I think, unfortunately, they've really had a challenging time. And I think, unfortunately, there has been a lot of casualties on the way.
You mentioned you're on a bit of a health kick right now, and we're seeing this in kind of reflected in many trends and many new restaurant openings and also menu adjustments as well. We did hear a while ago that there were going to be directives about adding healthier choices, but also including calories on menus. What's your thought about that as someone as an industry insider?
It's going to come at some stage. I think it's just a question of when. And I think as an industry, we have to embrace this. And I think what we've got to realize is that firstly, this is just going to educate our guests even more. It's going to allow them to have informed choices and decisions. Now, if we look back to when supermarkets went through this exact same situation where calories were required to go on their labeling, and there was just, I think, a level of uncertainty. And I think with any new change or any new directive that comes through, there is a level of change and there is a level of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think this was raised back in 2019. And when we looked at it, I checked with some of my US colleagues because they have had it in the US for a number of years. And the feedback we got is that, you know, really the impact that we were all worried about didn't actually happen. People came in, again, I think people, when they go out for their treats, is exactly that. I think it's a treat. And, you know, when you go out and you spoil yourself with a Gia Dolce, then you know it's a treat. And you know that, you know, if you're going to go on a health kick, then you might have to go to the gym for that extra few minutes to make sure that you balance.
It definitely changed my behaviours and choices when I was in the States. I remember going to the cinema, and I love nachos, love them. And sure enough, right next to the price was the calorie count. It was like 850 calories. And I was like, that's not happening. Got a hot dog instead for you know, 200 or something. But as you know, we're not babies. I ultimately know that a hot dog is going to be a healthier choice than nachos.
Absolutely.
But to be confronted by it, I think it's being put in place for good reasons. You know, unfortunately,
totally.
we do have an obesity crisis globally and certainly here in the UAE.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai i103.8.
We are talking food this afternoon. Tyrone Reed is here. He's the CEO of the Alabar Enterprise Group. They are the people behind incredible spots such as Marquette and Social House, both of which I have been to. By the way, amazing fries at Marquette. We had a great bowl of them in the day, Tyrone, overlooking the aquarium. Also, Gia, Candelicious, Angelina, if you fancy a beautiful little European dessert. And we're talking food news. So do get in touch. Let us know, what was the last great thing you ate on 4001? We know that we are living amid a pandemic and we kind of think about this being through it, but unfortunately the numbers are certainly not reflecting that. But what we are seeing is government responding really swiftly and very smart to the way of the world and the way we're going to be moving forward. So we're now seeing Al Hosn app entry requirements for malls, restaurants, hotels and supermarkets in our nation's fair capital. Tyrone, how are your what are your thoughts around this? What are your predictions and how do you think it's going to be received?
Again, I think there is no level of uncertainty just as these reports come out. And as ever, we hear, you know, the news, and then it's often, you know, a period of time before we digest it and understand it. And I think there is just this piece where we are in the midst of a situation which we have to take control over. Cases are slightly higher right now, and we'd love for them to be much lower. I guess from my side, I'm thinking of my team. I'm thinking of how my team interact with guests and really are at the front line day in, day out. We're very proud to be 100% vaccinated, and we have been for a long time. I was a vaccine volunteer and took that leap and have led the team from the forefront to make sure that vaccination is something for us to see our way out of it. And I just think the Al Hosn app will just allow businesses to continue to trade safely and hopefully fully. And it's welcomed, in my opinion.
So if you haven't heard this, just a quick clarification. Abu Dhabi announced yesterday that there are new measures in place, basically approving the use of the Green Pass through the Al Hosn app, exclusively for entry to a number of public venues such as shopping malls, large supermarkets, gyms, hotels, and the facilities there within those hotels, public parks, beaches, private beaches, swimming pools, entertainment centres, cinemas, museums, restaurants, and yes, cafes. This is going to come into force from Tuesday, June 15th. So what tends to happen is where Abu Dhabi leads, Dubai will follow. So I think this is something we can expect to see in this emirate very soon. So let us know your thoughts on that. And I think it's an interesting one in terms of people that have chosen not to get vaccinated for other reasons, but I'm sure this is all going to unfold in due time. It's wonderful that you have got all of your staff 100% vaccinated. And I think that's something we forget a lot of the time. We think about frontline workers and our minds understandably naturally go to those medical staff, but it's delivery drivers, it is Absolutely. Wait staff, it's security guards. So huge kudos there, Tyrone, for really leading the way. And now for something a little bit silly from the headlines. Gordon Ramsay divides opinion with his monster jawbreaker burger made with three cuts of beef, camembert, sliced apple and a puff pastry bun. I've seen it. I'm not going to lie. I've had a very average lunch and I think I'd quite like to eat it. How do you stand on these kind of attention grabbing headlines from established chefs, but also startups as well? Are they effective bit of marketing, do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you know, sometimes we're as guilty of it ourselves. I think sometimes when you come up with these trendy ideas, you're often creating things that you hope start a trend. And when they do, it just adds more visibility to the brand. It gives social credit to the brand. You know, in this region in particular, we see many, many businesses coming through that are very Instagrammable. Mm-hmm. They gain a lot of coverage. If we think back to, you know, the rainbow baguettes,
freak shakes,
you know, the cronuts, you know, it drums up a lot of attention. I think like anything, it's great that we have an opinion, and it's great that this just, I think, keeps F&B fresh and in the news.
Now, you've been in the industry for a long time. You were a chef, you've been a GM, you've obviously been in the region for a number of years. Can I ask you, what impact do you think Instagram has had when it comes to dish creation and how it is marketed?
I worked previously for a very well-known burger chain in the region from the US. And it's really interesting whenever you start thinking about how things can be very, very quickly copied. And I think Instagram, the globe has now flattened through Instagram because we can see trends from Japan, we can see trends out of the US. And I think what you've got to realize is whatever you create isn't unique. It's unique for you, but yet it can be copied tomorrow. So beyond that item, and this again back to this human-centric experiential piece, you've got to have things beyond just the food. Mm-hmm. I think the food is a huge aspect and it's an absolute massive hook. But without the 360-degree experience And I think this is the piece where Instagram doesn't bring you. It just brings you the image. It doesn't bring you the look, the touch, the feel, the smell. I think that's the piece. So I think Instagram's a huge tool, and we've embraced it, obviously. And I'm an avid user myself. Great for inspiring us, great for ideas. But ultimately, it's just how do we make it better and bring it alive?
And I think it comes back to that human connection, you know, to be able to go in and be welcomed by someone who knows that menu and is guiding you through it. And I think that's what we've missed. You know, you can swipe and order all you like, but it can come down to an individual who can literally make or break a dining experience. And I think that works Absolutely. Both ways. If you get a customer coming in with a bad attitude, that can set the tone for the evening or the lunchtime too. So never underestimate that human connection. And your staff are doing a brilliant job, Sharon. So thank you so much for your time today. I know Thursdays are busy in the world of F&B. Lastly, and I know this is going to be like picking a favourite child, but out of all of the outlets that you guys have, if we're going to visit the likes of Marquette, Social House, Angelina's over the weekend, what is the one dish you think would really bring a smile to the face?
Look, I had it yesterday. There is a summer pop-up in the midst of Dubai Mall. It's our Dolce by Gia. And they have just an amazing array, a choice of softies. It's an Italian concept, premium. So the velvet tiramisu, the mango snow, or the black pistachio. They're one of my three favourites right now.
Oh, tummy's rumbling across Dubai. Tyrone Reed, CEO of the Alibaba Enterprise Group. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Helen.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Speaking with two young women this afternoon who are turning social media on its head. It's the Vogue challenge, but with a twist. And these teenage girls here in Dubai are rebelling against the sometimes stereotypical images portrayed of women in glossy magazines on social media by creating their own online exhibition. They call it Newsstand, and it features copies of well-known magazines such as Vogue and Vanity Fair. And instead of focusing on the models' looks, concentrate instead on their other interests, their talents, their strengths that they feel better defines them as young women. The concept was picked up by popular English and Hindi language news website The Quint and has garnered more than 50,000 likes. Crikey. We're speaking to Sita and Anushka this afternoon. Anushka, can I ask you, and I wouldn't normally ask a guest this, but how old are you?
I'm 18. I recently turned 18.
Congratulations. And can I ask you, how long have you been on social media for?
I think I've been on social media ever since I was 13. So it's been around 5 years now.
And can I ask why? And I'm asking this as like a mum of two girls, and I'm pretty concerned in honesty about what social media is going to be looking like for them in 5 to 10 years' time. What was the big appeal for you in joining the likes of, well, Facebook for one, but more likely to be Instagram if you are such a visual person? What were you getting out of it when you were 13 compared to now?
I think I initially joined social media with the hopes of being connected with my friends even beyond school. And the chat abilities of a lot of social media platforms were really appealing. But as you said, when it comes to platforms like Instagram, there are definitely, especially when you're a teenager, this desire to see visually aesthetic, pretty photos. And Instagram was a great medium at that time to see that. It was sort of just taking off when I was 13. And so I think everyone was joining on there. Everyone was sharing really pretty photos. And I wanted to join on the bandwagon.
And how has the experience been, reflecting on the last 5 years of social media usage as a teenage woman? Yes, you are at 18. In 2021, how has the experience been?
I think it's really transformed. I think the growth of social media over just the last 5 years has been exponential. And obviously, when things grow, the good things that it brings also do expand, but so do the certain negatives. And definitely, as a teenager, being exposed to the entire world at your fingertips can definitely sometimes crop up insecurities when you're seeing other more visually aesthetic, beautiful photos on Instagram, which have sometimes been edited and aren't even a reflection of someone's real appearance, but it can be very negative and damaging. But I do think as you grow up, you learn to sort of filter out the difference between what's real and what's not. And you do learn how to use social media to your own advantage and for your own purposes. So for me, I definitely do like using social media these days to stay informed, to learn more about the issues that I care about. And I think in that sense, especially in a year like 2021 and 2020, it's been a great resource for me. I get to be updated about issues all over the world, especially I'm from India. So it's also been a fantastic tool in times of COVID. You get to know a lot of leads when it comes to, you know, getting resources to take care of your family in case they're suffering from the crisis. And I think this year especially, it's been a really wholesome place to be in terms of people coming together to support each other and bringing awareness to issues that they care about.
I think you're absolutely right. But I think it does take time and wisdom and education to get to where you are, which is a level of sophistication about consuming what you find and ultimately finding your tribe on social media, finding the positive, the connections, the community. And unfortunately, a lot of young men and women haven't had that kind of insight or guidance. Sushita, thank you so much for being with us. Can I ask you the same thing? What have you got out of social media since you joined it?
I think I joined social media when I was 13 as well. Initially, it was something where everyone was joining, so I was like, why should I hold back? I should join too. And when I was there, I was connected with so many of my friends beyond school, friends I'd made across the country, friends I'd made abroad. So it was something so special that I was able to talk to them, and at that time especially. Mm-hmm. And now I think everything has changed. Social media is not just used for pictures. It's used for raising awareness on issues we don't normally talk about. Talk about world issues, talk about things happening around the world and how we can come together to combat them. It's been a great medium.
It really has been. And I feel like social media is so often demonized. And we know there is an undeniable link between the rise of social media and the rise of mental health problems in young people, especially young women. But I think you two are incredible examples of using it for your own purposes, your own gains, your own communication channels and your own self-expression when it comes to social issues, such as the exhibition that you've done. And can you tell us a little bit, for anyone who's not familiar, what was the Vogue Challenge all about?
Absolutely. So the Vogue Challenge was, in fact, a trend that had taken off on TikTok around the summer of 2020, which was when quarantine really hit and everyone was at home. So the trend was essentially taking photos of yourself that you were particularly fond of and editing the Vogue logo on top of them to sort of imagine what it would be like to be on the cover of a magazine like Vogue. And people started doing these with other names of other high brand magazines as well. And it was just sort of an expression of wishful thinking. But I think at that time when Shuchita and I were scrolling through TikTok and we were going through all of these posts, we really thought that why should it be wishful thinking? Why is there this certain stereotype associated with what is acceptable for a high brand fashion magazine and what is not? Why are there these beauty standards that people are so sure that they cannot meet, and why are they so stringent? So I think Shuchita and I were also, up until recently, we just recently graduated. We were IB students at GEMS Modern Academy. And our school always encourages us to do really innovative CAS projects. CAS is a part of IB Creativity, Activity and Service. And they really allow us to use the CAS platform to explore issues that we were passionate about. So this took off as a CAS project, actually, where we decided to put a spin on the Vogue Challenge and sort of showcase what it would be like if magazines chose normal-looking girls, girls of all different shapes and sizes, and instead of just focusing on their looks, but rather on the other things that they bring to the table, what would the Vogue Challenge look like then?
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8.
Talking teens and social media this afternoon with Anushka and Shishita. They did the Vogue Challenge with a twist. This was social media trend that went around last year. People using that Vogue logo to basically put on their own photos and ask, why couldn't we be on the cover of a magazine? They turned it into something a little bit different. In fact, it was using Vanity Fair or news magazines as well and putting people that you perhaps wouldn't expect to see on the cover, highlighting their strengths, their talents, rather than their looks. Can I ask you, Shishita, what was the goal? What were you hoping to highlight?
So the goal of the Newsstand initiative was quite simple, as you were trying to spread a message about an underlying issue which is now quite prevalent in our society. So our project aimed to advocate the concepts of self-love and body positivity, as well as target the stereotypical image of women being marketed by mass media. And it also aims to defy the stereotypical notion that, you know, that all there is to a woman are her looks, and only conventionally beautiful women deserve to be on the cover page of a renowned magazine like Vogue or Elle. And I feel a woman can't and shouldn't be defined by her looks. There's so much more to her like her talents, her ambitions, which make her the girl she is today and the woman she will turn into tomorrow. So the incessant expectation to look beautiful has led to many women facing serious mental health issues like low self-esteem, lack of confidence, anxiety, and such are common ones. So I think it's very important to combat these issues, and we strive for the same.
I wish I was as wise as you when I was 18. Anushka, what has feedback been like?
The feedback has been overwhelmingly a positive. I don't think we expected to get such great feedback. And I think people were really resonating with our message and what we were trying to do. And we definitely got pointers for the future as well. So we got people asking us to do this for boys, because boys mm-hmm. also have certain inane beauty standards that they also face that can also lead to them feeling insecure and less confident about themselves. So definitely that is something we are looking at. We definitely love to do the same thing with boys. And we'd also love to do it with older women, because we've definitely got that feedback as well. And I think another part of our message, which is that beauty is not defined by things like shape, size, or color. It's also not defined by age. And I think that's definitely something we want to showcase as well.
Oh, honestly, you're just incredible. What I would say is that you're up against it, because we are bombarded constantly, whether it is through basically computer in our pocket, through our mobile phones, through advertising in the cinema, by the side of the road, as you've obviously pointed out, magazine covers. So why do you feel like it's so important to break the chain by disrupting this?
I believe that it's not important or necessary to prioritize smarts over looks or looks over smarts. Like, both are equally important in their own way. But smarts are definitely essential and need to be celebrated. But when we talk about looks, everyone is beautiful in their own way. Everyone is unique in their style, and that kind of uniqueness needs to be celebrated on every possible platform. And no one should be devoid of that kind of celebration. So I think women have been conditioned to believe the unrealistic standards of beauty set by society, and their self-worth is so often decided by others' perception. So I think that's a chain we need to break, definitely.
I think an awful lot of people stand to make an awful lot of money by, you know, trading in on our insecurities, to be honest. And it's amazing that you're so self-aware and aware of these industries at such a young age. Anushka, I wanted to finish by asking you, if any parents are listening and they're concerned about their daughters in particular using social media, are there any guidelines, any recommendations you'd make? Because we know it's not going anywhere. And as I said, there are huge positives to be gained by being on social media. But how can they use it in a way to really benefit them as young women in the world?
Absolutely. I think it's really important initially to have a conversation with your daughter, or even your son for that matter, about the fact that not everything that you see on social media is real. I think one thing that I've always tried to keep at the back of my mind when I'm using social media, and this would be advice that I would give to everyone, that social media is just a highlight reel. It is showing you the highlights of other people's lives, but not the entire picture. And it's really important to be aware that people don't always look like that. People aren't always celebrating. No one's life is just perfect and, you know, completely pink and rosy. So I think it's really important to have that conversation with your child right before you grant them that social media usage, and also encourage them to be open and discuss what they're doing on social media with you, conversations they're having, because also social media is a place where strangers can reach out to you, and those can sometimes lead to dangerous interactions. So I think just sort of creating that open atmosphere, which isn't making your child feel like you're policing them, because their social media is theirs and there is an element of independency associated with that, but just keeping that open atmosphere, which will make your child feel more comfortable to discuss how they're feeling after using social media, if it's coughing up any insecurities, and if they're having certain conversations that they think they you need to know about, there should be that atmosphere of trust.
Thank you so, so much for your insights this afternoon. If anyone wants to see the covers, your online exhibition, Shishita, what's the best way of seeing it?
So there's a link which is there on our Instagram bio, on our Instagram account. They can always click on it and watch the exhibition on Google Chrome. It just works there. So, please go ahead, watch it, and always use the hashtag #ChangeOurNewsStands.
And where can we find you on Instagram? What's the handle?
My own handle?
The one for all the links and all of the covers.
Okay, yeah, that's the newsstand.
That's the newsstand. Guys, I cannot thank you enough for your insights this afternoon. I think you're doing something really incredible, really valuable, and I'm really glad we can have this conversation on such a platform. So thank you so, so much. Incredible young women there. My goodness, to be that wise at 18, I cannot tell you.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Now, as a Brit, I'm not adverse to the odd bit of small talk about the weather. But, well, some people have a real genuine interest and something of a passion for it. Howard Townsend joining us now. He is known as the unofficial weather guy. Started a Facebook group with thousands of loyal members, and we're finding out more about his passion for what happens in the skies. Howard, how are you today?
Very good, thank you. Good to be with you.
It's lovely to have you with us. I've actually been wanting to talk to you for a while now because so many friends of mine got in touch and said, you are on that group, aren't you, the weather group? Have you seen that group? Have you heard this guy, Howard? And I was like, no, I need to investigate. You've got a real following, people that pay such attention to your thoughts, your predictions. And I'm curious to go back to the beginning, though, Howard. You do have a knack for your weather reporting. How and where did it start?
Well, it started actually many, many years ago when I was a radio amateur. Good weather forecasting for HF transmission and reception is one of the key points of it. Knowing weather around the world, knowing how the radio waves will skip around the Earth and bounce off the ionosphere, it's something I've been doing many, many years. I've got a passion for radio communication, weather, volcanology, many items. I'm a scientist at heart. I'm a systems engineer, and I just love being interested in everything.
I love this. So it is a science. It absolutely is. And, you know, what I think you do so well is turning that scientific talk and the way that you actually make your predictions into really accessible information for people. And you've become really relied upon. Why did you decide to turn it into a Facebook group?
It actually started out, the group is mainly for report or forecasting events of bad weather that may affect people in our daily lives out here, because a sudden change of wind, temperature or rainfall can actually have damaging effects on people. I started the group when I had actually a flood in my apartment. It was in 2016, we had a very bad spring storms then. I was flooded out. I spent all night mopping out my apartment as the rain was pouring in. It never normally flooded, I'll tell you this now, but that storm was so intense, it was blowing under the doors and actually through the window frames. It was one of the worst I've ever known. So I started forecasting for our local area in Algadir, it was at the time. Mm-hmm. It just took off from there. It started off with about 40 people, but it just exploded as I started to do my rain forecasts.
And that's the thing about Dubai. I mean, you're a Yorkshireman. I'm from the northeast, and we're used to driving in rain. It's the default, to be honest. But even the smallest shower here in Dubai, as you say, can be really devastating through drainage issues, but also through people not knowing how to drive, finding themselves in situations that are unfamiliar. They feel vulnerable. They panic a lot of the time. So it can come down to life or death, which sounds very dramatic, but it really can. And I know the exact same storm you're talking about, and it was horrendous to see, especially, you know, I was working in Alcoz at that time, to see some of the labourers who were just had their belongings completely ruined. We saw cars floating away and all sorts. And it's not just the big weather events that you report on. It can be, you know, the small details of people's lives. I've seen people commenting saying, Howard, we're having a barbecue in Arabian Ranches this weekend. What's the weather going to be like? Can you get that specific?
No. And I actually say in the group that I'm not that specific. I give a general forecast over the whole of the UAE, but I try and tie down to areas so people have got a good idea of where it's going to be. I mean, we can have, as you know, you can have a heavy rainfall 5 kilometres away and not a drop where you are. It's a very strange situation, the weather in the UAE. We tend to have very sharp, isolated showers. It's rare when we have the widespread items. Last year, spring of last year, 2020, was bad. But this year, again, totally opposite. Hardly a drop of rain around the country.
Do you have theories on why that might be? Because I've been here 14 years and I'm exactly the same. I remember this storm. I remember a sandstorm, rains. And I was thinking this year as well, it's been absolutely bone dry. We've been braced for it. Any theories behind that?
Well, there has been what is known as a bad El Nino in the Pacific Ocean on the west coast of North America. And that has caused some dramatic changes in weather. Snow in Texas, which is very unlikely. Heavy rainfalls and snow across Europe. And that seems to have changed the wind and weather patterns on the Earth's surface to restrict the normal flow of moist air down from the Caspian and Black Sea that would push the rain towards the Gulf area this winter. It's not unusual. It's happened before. But there are some severe weather systems that have happened around the world this year. It's very troubling at times. I won't go into the actual details of it. All I'm saying is at the moment, we've had a bad El Nino on the west coast of America, which has changed the northern hemisphere weather patterns this winter.
What kind of technology are you using at home or even apps? You know, how do you get your readings and use that data?
I use the METAR system. I use NCM, our own local weather system. Their weather stations and reporting are excellent. I recommend their new websites to anyone here. They are fabulous. I also use the UK Met Office. But one of the things that I think makes my weather forecasting a little special is I spent some time a few years ago going into areas of the country and speaking with some of the wise old men around here. And they can give you a great forecast, especially around Allen and those areas, of what the weather trends are like. And their knowledge is fabulous. I blend that in with the scientific knowledge.
And what are some of the techniques that, as you say, these locals, even Bedouins, are using? Because, as you say, they're not on apps and thinking about GPS. How are they looking to the skies?
They use wind, the actual, feel of the air around them. They can tell if it's high humidity, low humidity, and with certain winds, whether a bad rain is coming or fog or anything. They don't use hygrometers and rain meters and things like that, anemometers. They use their wet finger and instinct, and they have some fantastic knowledge to share.
And tell us then, how is summer going to be looking, Howard? We know, I think it was 40 when I was driving into work this morning. What should we be looking forward to or bracing for here in the UAE over the coming months?
Well, to be honest, I was actually forecasting a wet winter at the late last year. So my long-range forecasting isn't so brilliant, but I honestly think we aren't going to have an extremely hot summer. It started early, but I think we've still got some sort of cooler weather that's going to keep the temperatures down during summer. We are still running with the northwesterly chamal winds at the moment. They are what are keeping the coast to the mid-30s at the moment in high humidity, and the inland areas at 44 degree, mid-40s, very low humidity.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai I-103.8.
It is Thursday afternoon. Wonderful to have you with us. I've been wanting to speak to Howard Townsend for ages. He's a bit of a famous guy in some Facebook circles, mainly his own Facebook group. He is your unofficial weather guy, and his Facebook group went from a mere 40 members up to around 8,000 people hanging off his every word for his predictions about what the weather is going to do. This isn't a small topic for him. It's not you know, how's the weather? This is a passion and a science. And we obviously can't talk about the UAE weather without touching on humidity.
Well, the humidity factor on the coast here is a natural thing. You have a quandary here. To get low temperatures, because we are on a peninsula, literally surrounded by water all the way around, apart from a little bit inland of Saudi and Oman, we do get, when we get cooling winds off the sea, we get a lot of humidity put into the land because the sea is warm here and it's evaporating very rapidly. And that creates the high humidity for us. It's a balance of whether it's going to be hot and dry or cool and humid.
Now, Howard, let's turn to the Facebook group because, as I said, it is a loyal band of Howard fans who tune in for your updates. And they also share as well, you know, pictures and details of, you know, astronomical events and, you know, what's happening in their parts of the world. Did you ever think it was going to grow into a group of that size or scale?
Well, I didn't expect the group to grow so large. But the title of the group, actually, the unofficial weather and info group, the info side is the astronomical things, earthquakes, we even report, that kind of thing. But also, as you say, the members are fabulous. It's one of the nicest groups I've ever, I'm running this one, but it's one of the nicest groups I've ever been in. I've got a great set of admins that take care of the group as well. It's so polite most of the time. We can get the odd one or two, but no, they are a great bunch of people. They put some fantastic weather reporting photographs on there, some lovely sunsets, sunrises, all those sorts of things.
I try and encourage
people when I've got less weather forecasting reports to do, I encourage them to put their information on.
And there are some lovely photos of, as you say, weather around town. You share not just weather, but advice about living in Dubai, you know, putting water out for the birds and things like that. And I just want to say a massive thank you. I think it's a really lovely part of the community and you've built that. It is a group. So do you have any systems in place for accepting the nice people who are genuinely interested in what you've got to say?
Oh, yeah. We try and encourage as many people to join as possible. It gets around more by word of mouth than anything. But as I say, during the summer, there's not a lot to report on. I started the group mainly for weather alerts so that people are aware to take precautions for rain, whether they're driving to work in the morning or if it's going to be foggy or something. It's to help people more than anything. And I don't report in the summer because it would literally just be hot, hot, hot each day. So I relax and let the other people put their info on the site. But
well, it's
whenever there's, I love to do the alerts, give people preparedness.
I think that's really key. And you do it in such a lovely way. Clearly a big passion, a huge sort of sense of enjoyment from you and getting lots of love back. Howard Townsend, if people want to join, you are the unofficial weather guy. The group is the unofficial UA Weather and Info Group. And you can be found on Facebook. Wishing you a wonderful weekend ahead. I'm going out and about tomorrow afternoon. Factor 50, I'm guessing.
Well, this weekend, actually, depends on where you are. We have the northwesterly winds in place. It will keep the Gulf coastline to the mid-30s, high humidity, and the inland areas, low humidity, mid-40s C. There is one factor, Saturday morning. Overnight Friday into Saturday morning, there will probably be the likelihood of fog between Dubai and Sharjah, extending inland to Al Ain.
Howard, I just love you. Thank you so much, honestly. And I've started sailing, so you might be hearing from me looking for some wind reports as well. You're an absolute star. Thank you. Have a great weekend ahead.
Okay. Thanks for having me on. Have a great weekend yourself.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai I 103.8.
It is Thursday and I'm getting you in the mood for the weekend. Talking food, and as much as I love eating food and actually know quite a lot about food, I'm a pretty rubbish cook. I sincerely hope my husband isn't listening because he probably will send in a message to 4001 saying, I have my moments. Let's just say for dinner last night, I had scrambled eggs on toast and it was a delight. But how can you whip up some simple dishes using only 5 ingredients? This is my kind of cooking. Justine Dampf is with us this afternoon, founder of Better Food. She's a certified health coach from the Institute of Integrative Nutrition in New York. And she's talking us through how to make some pleasing dishes using only 5 ingredients, or indeed less. Justine, great to have you with us. Can you tell us about Better Food? Eat Better
Sure.
Food.
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me. So, you know, like I'm a plant-based eater myself. So, you know, when I came to Dubai around 10 years ago, there were not that many options. So I'm saying that because
to explain my ambition in life, but as well with this company, has always been to show that plant-based food can be easy and delicious. So that's exactly the mission of Eat Better Food. We are dedicating to make plant-based and gluten-free version of your favorite food, the food that you actually know and like. So so that's pretty much what we do. We make your life easier.
So tell us about some of the products then. That I like anything that makes life easier, to be honest. What are some of your most popular?
Yeah, so we started with coconut wraps. Our product itself, I have only like very few ingredients. So the coconut wraps have 5 ingredients only, no preservative, no additive. It's all natural. It comes in 2 flavors, including one with spinach, which is perfect for little picky eaters when you want to hide an extra, you know, bit of veggies in their diet. So it's a regular wrap made out of coconut flour, like, and you're just warming up slightly, no oil required, and you can just do burritos, wraps, even little pizza, you can do chips. There's many ways to eat these wraps, and it's just very convenient and easy. Another product we have is actually a frozen sink pizza base. That could not be easier. It sits in your freezer, you remove the packaging, you take it out, and you basically add your topping and put it in the oven. So I think anyone is capable of doing a very delicious homemade pizza.
Well, to be honest with you, it's my kids' favourite thing to make. That's one, my only tip as a parent of picky kids, is if they make it, they seem to be more inclined to eat it. So that is really good to know. So Justine, can you tell us some of your favourite things to make using only 5 ingredients? Can we start with breakfast in case people haven't had it? I'd be very surprised if they hadn't, but you've got a breakfast wrap. What goes in there?
Yeah, so breakfast wrap. So if you are non-vegan, scrambled eggs, I think, you know, once again, everybody is capable of doing scrambled eggs. Like, the tips with scrambled eggs is actually to put the eater very, very low and to be very patient. That's the recipe for very, you know, soft scrambled eggs. If you're vegan, you just scramble some tofu, and my secret ingredient is actually turmeric. In order for the turmeric to activate itself, you need to add like black pepper. So black pepper, black salt as well. And then you can, by the way, you can add that on your eggs as well for extra, you know, vitamins and nutrition. Then you cut half a tomato, half an avocado. You take your wrap from Eat Better. The original one is great for breakfast wrap. You're just warming up in a pan or even microwave or in the oven for a few seconds, no more than like 5 seconds on the pan on each side when the pan is very hot, and 7-10 seconds in the oven. And then you just add your topping in the middle, eggs or scrambled eggs, vegan scrambled eggs, tomato and avocado, and you just fold it like a burrito or like a wrap, and you're good to go.
Do you know what makes me think of? All the stressed parents who are trying to get their kids to eat breakfast in the morning. If you put it in a little cup or something, you folded the bottom well, this could be breakfast on the go, actually. That's why I like wraps, Justine. This is my tend to be my kind of on the go. And what other wraps do you recommend? Can you give us some of your favorite fillings?
Yeah, you're speaking about kids, you know, like I used to love, even though I'm French, you know, I used to love when I discovered the peanut butter, that was like, which we don't really have in France, but that was like a major discovery in my diet. And I love this jelly peanut butter kind of like sandwiches. So, you know, like to make a healthier version of it, what I would recommend as well for parents or non-parents, actually, it's good for everyone, but it's to make like a little jam without sugar. So you can take 1 cup of frozen raspberry or alternatively blueberries if you prefer. You just add that in a pan on low heat with 1 teaspoon of chia seed, and you don't even need sweetener. If you have a sweet tooth, or, you know, like if your kids start to eat like maybe sugar-free or sugar-less diet, you can add like a little bit of honey if you're non-vegan, or a little bit of maple syrup. But usually just the fruit being melted would release a lot of sweetness. And you just like let the fruit melt for a few minutes, maybe like 5 to 10 minutes, and you will have your jam ready. You just let it to rest.
You can make as well your homemade peanut butter. It's actually very easy. You just roast the peanuts for 5 minutes until it gets golden in the oven. You let them cool down. When it's cold, you process them in a food processor. When the texture is very smooth, then you take one of your wraps. Original is a good option for this one, our original flavor. Same, you're warming up for a few seconds on the pan or in the oven without any oil, and you can put the jelly and the peanut butter in the middle of your sandwich. And that is like a gluten-free, vegan, no sugar kind of option. Same, very easy to take on the go. And, you know, like the wraps that we created, contrary to other gluten-free wraps, you know, like they are not crumbling. So, you know, like your kid can actually have a grip on it without, you know, like dropping everything, you know, like in your car or on your white t-shirt.
Justine Damp is founder of Eat Better Foods, sharing her 5 ingredient recipes that you can make this weekend.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are talking food this Thursday afternoon in conversation with entrepreneur and foodie Justine Damp. She is the founder of Eat Better Foods, and she's sharing some of her 5 ingredient meals that you can make this weekend. She mentioned pizza bases and suggested some healthy toppings.
You know, this fancy truffle pizza that we usually have in restaurants, it's actually very easy to make that at home. So, and our pizza dough make it like a 10-minute process for you. So you take the pizza out of the freezer, remove the packaging, which is like was going to take you the most time. You put the pizza directly in the oven for approximately 7 minutes at 180 degrees without any topping. And then when the dough starts to be golden, then you add the cheese of your choice, vegan options or non-vegan options, and you sprinkle the cheese on the top of your pizza. You put it back in the oven for 4 minutes. I like to do that because I like when the cheese is melted and not, you know, like as golden or burned. So, you know, like I like it just like very soft. So that's my tips, you know, like you just take the pizza out and add the cheese at the last minute. And then you can find, you know, like in different supermarket or different, you know, online supermarket, truffle oil or truffle sauce. And you just need to add like 2 tablespoons of, you know, like the sauce or oil that you have found. And this is like the most delicious pizza. It's thin and it goes so well, for instance, with a green salad. And guests are always impressed because, you know, like because of the truffle, I guess. but it's always very, it's always a hit.
It's those. It is those little touches that can elevate what you buy in the supermarket to feeling like it's restaurant quality. And where can people find the wraps?
So you can find our product at Spinneys, Waitrose, and Kipson. And I encourage you as well to follow us on Instagram at eatbetter.foods. For a lot of like different recipes and how and tips on how to use our wraps and our pizza.
Justine, thank you so much. I think you've definitely made a few tummies rumble this afternoon. And now I'm craving truffle pizza. It's not available in the Dubai Eye studio, but I might try and make one tonight. Thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful weekend ahead.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It is Thursday. We have, of course, been talking food, but let's talk fashion now. Kelly Lundberg joining us, celebrity stylist, businesswoman, entrepreneur and speaker. Kelly, I've got to ask you something. I remember us speaking a number of years ago and me extolling the virtues of Birkenstocks and saying how much I loved wearing them and you basically rolling your eyes at me. Well, the joke's on you because everyone is loving an ugly shoe. We are talking summer trends. Ugly shoes are everywhere. What's this about?
Oh, it's the bane of my life. Like, it really is the bane of my life at the moment.
I love that you're consistent with your opinion, though.
Completely. I mean, if it's not like, if it's not flat shoes and sandals that are something like we wore 25 years ago that just make your feet look massive, like I really struggle with them. And for someone like even myself, I've got really small feet. And every time I just try them on, I'm like, it just looks like I borrowed my dad's shoes. Like, it just looks stupid. And combine that with, Balenciaga. You see, the whole Balenciaga and Crocs thing, I think that's more a marketing collaboration in the sense of PR buzz than it actually is, like, shoe and something that people would wear.
Mm-hmm. Crocs is where I draw the line, to be honest. For me and my children, you can tie-dye them, you can Bieber emboss them all you like. Saw Priyanka Chopra wearing them on the side of Schicksal Road a few months ago. I sincerely hope she was paid a very pretty penny for that collaboration. But I think, is this the result of the pandemic? People not leaving the house for a year, heels are out, comfort's in, and we just can't shake off this trend?
No, I do just think it's kind of one of these things. I think there's always sort of shoes that kind of come around and you're like, no, I wouldn't wear them. Mm. And we've got staples that we like. So I do still think, I mean, remember, I mean, I think there's less of it, but trainers now, I would say that's more kind of to do with the comfort factor and pandemic rather than the ugly shoe alert that's just like, how much bigger can we make your shoe? And, you know, the whole thing that gets me as well is about proportions. You know, so when I've styled clients over the years, it's about, you know, it looking... everything looking well proportioned. And if you've got like a nice floaty dress on, and I get adding a really chunky shoe, but I just don't think it works.
Oh, let's talk trends that you do like as we look ahead into summer. And it's quite interesting in terms of how trends translate here to Dubai, because we are obviously in a hot part of the world. So some things work and some things don't. What do you think is worth spending our hard-earned dirhams on, if providing we like it, to look up to the minute?
Well, I think like a really easy addition that maybe doesn't need to cost a lot could be like a straw bag. You know, a favorite bag that you could have as a crossover. It could be like a small version. And they've kind of got them everywhere, from like Marks and Spencer's to Mango to Zara to like your high-end Max Mara have them. So I would say that would be a really nice, easy addition to, like, you know, if you had a white dress that you wore last year, how could you style it differently? I would say add something like that in. I have seen a lot of sort of short skirts coming back. And I say short skirts, I guess kind of like mini skirts, and how people are wearing them are either with like an oversized shirt or with a kind of crop top underneath, and maybe doing that more kind of in the evening. So I've seen a lot of that as well. When it comes to summer here, it's about what's easy to wear in 50 degrees heat.
Exactly.
Do you remember?
Love a wafty
years
frock.
Ago, yeah, do you remember a couple of years ago, it was like leather shorts were really in. It's just like leather for summer in mm-mm. Dubai is just a disaster.
No, it becomes a rostrum friend situation with your talcum powder. It forms a paste. Kelly, I'm still seeing lots of puffy sleeves and shoulders around.
Well, they're amazing if you're a pear-shaped body shape, because they just kind of, with the ruffles on the shoulders, just kind of nicely balance the hips. So I think that they're great, and especially if you can combine it with a little bit of sort of floral pattern, you know, a small like kind of you know, like tiny blooms, it just kind of makes it maybe a little bit more contemporary and quite feminine. And again, you know, maybe if we're, someone said this to me the other day, the COVID cuddle, so they've gained a few kilos. So I kind of think that sort of thing can also disguise away if you're still carrying the COVID cuddle around your waistline, because, you know, the puffy sleeves detract away from that, and a nice little print would disguise that too.
What about colours? Anything that you feel is worth getting on the bandwagon with? I've seen a lot of apple green. What else is looking pretty popular?
Honestly, like for me, and from what I've seen, it's a lot of neutrals. You know, how can you embrace the sort of neutrals, which might not be great if you're like, I've got three kids and, you know, mm-hmm. get stuff filthy. But, you know, if it's machine washable, then it can really work. So I've seen that red has made a bit of a sort of appearance this summer. I don't love it myself, but I think it depends kind of how you embrace it. And making sure, like, if you're going for a particular color like a red, make sure that you choose one that works for your skin tone. So if you're a cool skin tone, then, you know, a cooler red, and vice versa. If you're a warmer skin tone, look for a red that's warmer.
Now, we cannot neglect the gents out there. My husband, I don't know if I told you at the time, so he had a planned side hustle, which was going to be what he called the flazer. A toweling, fluffy blazer that you could throw on by the pool. So, you know, certain parts were covered if you went up to get a drink or have some lunch, but also practical in terms of absorbency. We laughed at him. He even got a prototype made. Well, the joke is on me, because toweling fabric just seems to be absolutely everywhere right now. He just bought toweling shorts and a shirt. I bought some toweling shorts. So what I'm saying is I should have believed and invested in the flazer.
I always think that's something that you kind of dress the kids in, you know, when they get out of the pool, that sort of thing.
It's not a bad idea. Love a poncho. So what about the gents? Any recommendations for looking cool in the hot, hot heat?
Yeah, I think something that's really nice, you know, especially for this temperature for men, and like All Saints carry this really nicely, and if to do it on a budget, you can look at Zara, is, you know, a nice white T-shirt with a loose shirt open on the top, and you could do that with shorts, you could do that with chinos. And if it's something that's not a stiff fabric, so a nice kind of soft, no, I don't mean Hawaiian, let's get that clear, but, you know, something that's kind of a fabric that's just soft and moves with you, then what it can do is just sort of elongate the body and just look a little bit more relaxed, but it looks more pulled together than just a basic T-shirt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay,
so I think something like that could be quite, you know, an easy addition, or if you just want to smarten something up. Again, loads of neutrals for men as well. The smart, I say the jogging bottoms, but they're trousers. I don't know how many pairs I've bought of these for gents over the past kind of couple of months, because men love comfort even more than women. And if you can combine comfort with just something that's a little bit more elegant, these have just worked so well.
Where are you buying these from?
For men?
Yeah.
I bought so many times in Zara.
Okay, there you go.
You know,
go,
where
chaps.
Else I bought them? In Harvey Nichols, I've also bought a pair there as well for a client. Maybe a couple of pairs there. Did I get them in Paul Smith? Hugo Boss, I got a really nice pair of chinos there a couple of weeks ago for a client who was going to a wedding. And then sort of Zara for your sort of everyday, you know, you could do that with a T-shirt and a shirt over the top, or you could do it with a blazer and a T-shirt and sneakers, and it looks smart, but super comfortable.
Kelly, you are a star as ever. What's the best way of getting in touch and booking your services for some one-on-one advice?
So yeah, Kelly Lundberg Official, where you can find me, and I am great to speak to you.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You can tune into Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer, live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Sunday to Thursday between 2 and 5. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast. It helps other people find us, boost us in the ratings, and you'll get it direct to your phone.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.